This week on RSBNB Update, it's a big one as Maud Osborne joins us for a fireside talk on the past, present, and future of RuneScape. What exactly is Cadence? What may have an alternate summer have looked like? And what is in store for RuneScape's future? This is RSBNB Update, episode 752, recorded Thursday, November 21st, 2019, the Cadence of RuneScape's future. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. This weekend, of course, being Double XP weekend, is a bit of a surprise for everybody listening, but nonetheless, this is going to be a very, very interesting episode of RSBNB Update. Tanis, you're here as you are each and every week. Welcome back.
Thank you, Shane.
And I am very pleased to announce this week we have a very special guest joining us to talk about this week's RuneScape updates and some ideas of content going into the future. Maud Osborne, welcome to the show.
Why, hello. Thank you so much for having me.
It's so great to have you. And is this the first time you've done a podcast?
I think this is the first time I've done a podcast outside of the company. I used to do Above the Laws. I don't know if you remember.
Okay, right, I remember.
So they were kind of story-oriented ones.
All right. Well, so we're making history
here. Wild.
We are making absolute history here.
Damn right.
So for anybody joining us for the first time, I am Shane12088 in game. If you want to get in touch, I always keep my friends chat on. Tanis is Tanis79, and I don't think Maud Osborne needs much of an introduction, but you can find him in the official RuneScape Discord, on the live streams, and pretty much, I guess, any major RuneScape social channel we could say, right?
I am massively available. I'm a hussy. Please to get in touch.
All right. So we wanted to talk a bit about, let's just say, bringing back the content Cadence to RuneScape and what that means for everybody else is just getting back to a sense of regular updates in game. Because if you look back at the history of RuneScape, it made its history by being that game that you could play at lunch. It always has had something new. And for the bulk of its existence, it's updated weekly with the exception of a few scenarios. And this has become a more common thing in the gaming world, I think we can all think, where it's not uncommon to see a game, especially if it's an MMO, get an update weekly, get an update monthly, something to that effect. And this leads back into RuneScape, because one of the things RuneScape is most known for is, of course, its wide breadth of content. You know, we're approaching 20 years of the game, and just thinking off the bat how much content there is in game, it's absolutely massive. But nonetheless, it's always been a quick and easy way to get started with it, whether it's chopping those trees and lumberage or mining some ore. It all comes back to that weekly update cycle. And Maud Osborne, you've agreed to talk with us and spend some time talking about the future and what happened after the launch of Anachronia this summer. So welcome aboard.
Thank you. Yeah, not daunted at all. We can talk about this. Let's do it.
Yeah. So first, let's start off by giving yourself a bit of a brief introduction. How long have you been with Jagex, and what are you currently doing at the company?
Yeah, of course. So I came to Jagex about 13 years ago. That was to be a web content editor. So I kind of arrived. That was the first time I'd really been introduced to the game as well. I wasn't one of those people who kind of arrived, having played for like years and years. I think I called it RuneCraft in the interview, so God knows how I got the job. But they obviously saw something in me. And so the first job that I remember doing was quest help for Eye of Gluffery. And so I was doing lots of that kind of quest help work, getting a bit creative. And eventually, a little bit down the line, then it got into editing the text, the prose in the game. Obviously, the Gowers wanted it to be quite independent and human, but there was the point where they thought they needed to be a bit more professional.
Right.
And so, you know, having semicolons and apostrophes in the right places made sense. So that's what I did. And then I just got really belligerent. I was like, I'm determined not to just give feedback on the quality of the grammar. I'm going to give feedback on, you know, dialogue, character. where the story's going, that kind of thing. So I was the annoying person knocking on Paul Gower's door just to tell him that his stories weren't right. Which so, you can imagine how that went.
So I guess that eventually morphed into you becoming the lore expert then.
Yeah, that's right. It was I think that ModMark at the time was a little bit snowed under. He was basically the only designer on the game, which kind of makes sense if you realize that a lot of the developers are designers. We've got dev designers here, which is really unusual. But he was the only one really giving feedback. He was the only one who was looking at the strategy for long term. And he decided that he wanted a suite of three designers at once. And so these kind of positions opened up, one of which was narrative designer, and I kind of went for it and gave, in his words, one of the worst interviews he's ever had. but there was enough in the kind of feedback that I'd given before. I'd done some practice kind of design reviews on like sagas, things like that.
Right.
And then, yeah, as you say, that made me, I went straight into senior narrative designer as well, which was crazy at the time. I think the thinking was because the developers were designers, you had to be a senior to be, you know, have authority over them. But if you look at the industry, going straight into senior is crazy nowadays.
Then
after being senior designer for a bit, was product owner as well. So I started overseeing some teams, including, I mean, the most fateful of them being Elf City. And obviously being the designer and leader of the team that put out Elf City, which I think internally was seen as well as externally as pretty successful.
Yeah,
and
I mean, I have had co-hosts on Elf City who were only playing the game to wait and see because they needed to have that Plague's End, and they needed to have peripheries before they could effectively complete the arc of their character and feel that, we're done. So it was very well received, especially in our community. We're a bunch of lore hounds and quest nuts too, whenever quest week comes around. So we absolutely love all that stuff relating to that. So fast forwarding a bit on that sense, so you were in charge of content teams going forward, and I think the biggest team that you're now in charge of is the episodic content team, which we heard about this summer around September, August, I believe it was. So just for anybody who missed the designer diary on that, can you give a brief overview of what the episodic content team does and what the goal of it is?
So episodic content's kind of, you know, it's a function that's existed. We've always done quests and minigames and bosses and that kind of thing, but it was just, we kind of gave it a name and made sure it was protected so that nobody else could take away from us, basically. But yeah, we're the ones who produce, for me, the value to a subscriber. That's one of the biggest things. Like when you subscribe, you expect regular updates. You expect content to play through, new things to achieve, and that's what the team produces. Quests, skills, bosses.
All right, so pretty much any content that's going to stay in game and push the narrative of the RuneScape world forward, then, is a good way of describing it then.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think that whenever somebody like buys a subscription, there's a certain thing they expect in return, and I think a lot of that comes from this team. If I buy a subscription, it's because I think there's a cool quest out, or there's the anticipation of a new skill. That's what episodic content does.
All right, so in a nutshell then, without your team, there would be no reason for somebody to purchase a RuneScape subscription going forward, saying that, you know, if there was no new skills coming out, if the game was just going to sit stale, which it will never do.
That sounds massively arrogant. I love it. I think it's just the other teams are doing things that you would expect, but you wouldn't subscribe for. Like, you know, LiveOps. For example, take what LiveOps is doing. They're doing, obviously, the monetization features, but they're also doing holiday events, or they're doing events. I think that people play for those, but they don't subscribe for those.
Right.
And also the core experience team, who haven't really been introduced properly. Obviously, you saw Mod Pips at the end of the RuneFest reveal section.
Yeah, we saw a bit of Hypnos on the stream this week and a few weeks back.
Yeah.
Not too much else. So,
I think mobile, we have to be careful that, first of all, it doesn't eat into the content we produce.
Right.
But also, I think a lot of the things, the improvement of, refactoring the code, improvement of how the game feels, you don't subscribe for that. You don't play through that. But it's so, so important for, you know, new players, for anybody who's just doing the same thing over and over again and wants, you know, not to have lag. to not have to hop worlds all the time, you know, that kind of thing.
All right. So it's all of these different teams are effectively different pieces of the pie then, and your team then, we said, just pushes the content forwards and gives the players that extra cherry on the top to subscribe with. I like that description.
Yeah.
Okay. So looking at this, would you say it's fair to assume that we can say that updates like the player-owned farm, the needle skips, Elite Dungeons and Anachronia, and these can be used as a template for future content, grand, epic pieces of content? Or would you say there's room for smaller types of content in your team as well?
Yeah, I think, I mean, those are really interesting examples you've picked, because I think individually, none of them would exist nowadays with episodic content.
Okay.
For various different reasons. Just because of kind of what you mentioned, that there's, I think that we've woken up to the importance of releasing pretty frequently. Like in the past, certainly in the past like 3 or 4 years, we've looked at the frequency of releases and thought, and I found that it's really hard to get a sense of whether or not that's been a reason for somebody to subscribe. You know, like, does anybody subscribe for, you know, God Emissaries or Skill Chompers? Probably not. So it's been really hard from like my perspective to go to the mod Pips of this world, the mod Marks of this world, and say, look, we need to have frequent stories because it's important, because that leads to people playing. It leads to you know, lots of people enjoying the game more. So we haven't really been able to make the argument well, but I think this year, because we've had so many gaps, and if you point to Menophos as well, when we had a lot of gaps,
right,
I think that you could see the problems of not launching things. I mean, the obvious clear one,
yeah,
is by not launching a lot, people were talking about things we don't want to be sitting here talking about our promos all the time. People are looking at the front page and seeing how many, how few of the news posts are featuring content. And I think the largest proportion of that is because we're not delivering value by giving content updates, and we're not delivering value by this content cadence, which is, I think we're starting to realize, or I'm getting some ammunition to prove that it is really valuable and it's what people want.
All right. Well, let's dive into that. And before we do that, I want to just bring to the sense of the listeners of this show that, you know, when we look at what is effectively the life cycle of an update, there are some players out there who think it's, you know, a week or 2 week process to start an update and get it into the player's hands, which is not true. So could you just provide a bit of an insight into the top level process that the update has to go through before the players get it in their hands?
How long do you reckon the average update takes from like kind of idea to?
Well, I do have a bit of a background on how the industry works, so my idea might be a bit biased. So let's ask Tannis then. What do you think?
2 months on a medium, maybe.
Yeah, that's not bad. I would say probably about 3 months on average.
Okay.
Starting off, obviously, you've got the design stage, which probably depends on the piece of content, obviously, on how intensive it needs to be. Like, weapon diversity was high on design, for example. But I would say probably a couple of weeks on design and validating with players, that kind of thing. And then I would say development for a good couple of months. And then we enter the period of hardening, release QA, that kind of thing.
Testing.
The relaunch. Yeah.
Testing.
So yeah, 3 months, and that would be, I'm just trying to think, like Desperate Times and Needle Skips as quests, maybe. Trying to think of skilling content that would be that long.
Deep Sea Fishing, maybe?
Deep Sea Fishing was probably about 5 or 6.
Okay.
I think largely because it was quite graphically lavish.
It did look good. It looked really good.
So, like, you know, from a dev perspective, yeah, I'd say 3 months is about right.
All right. So with that in mind, you know, we went back to, obviously, the fact that you were involved in the design work around Prif, and you brought the players in very, very early on that. We were floored that a game studio would open this process up for this piece of content we'd all been waiting for on years. And this was openness and transparency that was unheard of at this time for a game studio to do this for such a huge flagship piece of content. How do you think that went? And would you do Prif any different this time in terms of involving the players?
Honestly, if you ask me personally, I think it went really well. I think that the transparent design documents, they took a long time to put together, because obviously it's not as if we can just bash something together and throw it out there. It has to be like super pro. It's got to be watertight. Otherwise, people just call us on it, and rightly so. So there was a bit more effort put into making it, as we say, player facing. I think if there was one thing that I would change about it, it was I think it falls into the same trap that a lot of polls do, which is when you're listening to everybody's feedback and you're attributing the same weight to everybody's feedback, it can often be that you make something overly rewarding. I think that's my greatest regret from Elf City, and I don't think it was a bad update by any means. But I think it had more than it needed, and I think that it was probably... that was probably because I was trying to make it this kind of greatest hits package of all of RuneScape. Right. And a lot of that was calling on various high-level players, what they played, what they valued, and packing it all into one city. I don't know what you guys feel, but I think in hindsight, it probably did so much that there was no reason to go elsewhere.
Yeah, that's the exact sense. And for me personally, the cherry on top of all that was adding in waterfall fishing, something that, in my view, didn't even fit within the Prif lore.
Loved Prif. I'm always doing this, but I didn't think it's... I thought it was exactly as generous as it should be, given who it was supposed to be for.
Yeah, so. We always knew it was a milestone. I mean, it's hard because obviously so many people are working up towards it. You've got to give something good, right?
Yeah. But it's the best quest reward ever.
Yeah, exactly. Let's do it for every quest, right? But, yes. You only have to look at how kind of old school have handled their version of Elf City to see what they've pulled back. We had those meetings when they were looking to do the design for Elf City, and they were very conscious of delivering too much, basically. And you can see every single time we were telling them what we did with Elf City, they were like, you know, I'm not sure I want to do that because we don't want to follow the same path. But focusing on the negatives, it's personally, I would love to do that kind of transparency with every update. That's where I sit anyway. I've always been a kind of collaborative, wanted to get everybody involved. But I think there are problems with doing that in that it slows down an update hugely. And this hits the content cadence question quite hard.
Right. And we're getting there. And I imagine we might be talking about that. So would you rather instead maybe do something like we had at RuneFest, where players get given maybe a video or an infographic with a 6 month or so outlook of general ideas of what's potentially on the way? And then when the content is finally ready, have it go into a live stream showcase instead, maybe? Or?
I think it's a really good point to talk about how we've shifted and how we, that's a horrible business dev term, validate our updates. But so what we've moved to from RuneScape is that we do a lot more player testing and we do a lot more kind of survey under NDA. I don't know if you're aware of a lot of the surveys we did for archaeology, for example.
No, we didn't hear about those.
No, I really surprised it didn't get out there because there was some ridiculous ideas for skills on it. What we did was we decided we were going to, we had 6 ideas that we really liked for skills. We were going to test them against players, see which ones really worked, and then also see which had the biggest design opportunity. Once we had all that information, that we'd get on with it. So that what we've done is we've kind of found ourselves in the place where we're getting a lot of information about what players want, but nobody can see that we're doing it.
Okay.
So it's tough for me because obviously the player perspective is, Jagex, you're just shutting up shop. You're not talking to us anymore. You're not doing enough poll work, which in some instances is completely right. We're not. But we're also still, we're doing more than ever, a lot of this kind of pre-production stuff to make sure what we're doing is right. So then I'm getting to this weird position whereby I could poll things, but I'd be polling it solely for PR reasons.
Right.
Like, to show that we are being open and transparent. And I think that this isn't working. I feel like it feels like there's a disconnect between what we're doing and, you know, how players want to get involved.
Could that be why when, you know, going back to updates like Elite Dungeons and Anachronia and the Needle Skips, why these resonated so well with players? I don't know if the behind-the-scenes R&D was done on that.
Yeah, I think more so, I'd say Needle Skips was an odd one in that it was a game jam one. So that was more from a kind of player passion.
Okay.
A personal passion one. But certainly Land Out of Time, Anachronia, that really was. That was, I think we had four, maybe five separate player visits to play all of the independent pieces of content. We did survey work on what it should be. You know, we pitched a kind of old school Fossil Island versus this, you know, kind of living version of Fossil Island. And this is what came out. So yeah, we did a fair amount of it. But of course, then, you know, you can't avoid, there will be always be players who look at that and think, what is this? I didn't ask for this. What are you doing?
Because I know our perspective when Land Out of Time came out is that our really only concern with it the first week was that the minimap pathing wasn't exactly clear which way you were supposed to go. And from the perspective of such a huge piece of content, that is a minor thing for us to be concerned about.
Yeah, I couldn't get around. Like, I had a real hard time. But at the same time, it was okay to go slow because it looked really cool. And I know we talked about that for a long, long time. But going back to something you're talking about, with all the player testing, do you try to just get like player buy-in? That's something that I saw as the design documents really, really did. Like, when those came out on Priftinus, I was sold and engaged. And even though I have nothing to do with it, I felt part of it at that point. And it definitely hooked me in. So where is that balance at? Like, you know, you want to get players kind of, you know, you want to get them to buy in, but not, I guess, overhype at the same time.
Yeah, I think you're smack on. What I said previously wasn't because I wasn't dismissing the fact that I was having to do polls to get buy-in and as a PR exercise. That's actually a huge failing of the player testing model that we've been using up to this point for about the past year and a half. Because you're right, I think that player buy-in is huge and we're missing out on that. And there are various other things that we could do to get that. Like, there's no reason why we couldn't, you know, for example, player council work. I think a lot of other games do it. I'm thinking of Eve and CCP for a good example. There's no reason that we couldn't publicly get a player forum in, you know, take minutes, show what happened in them, maybe even record them, you know, for people to watch.
That would be an interesting format.
Annual surveys and backlogs, I think, are good.
Like the annual surveys. Very revealing stuff comes out of those.
Yeah. I'll be the first to point out that I think that it hasn't got the balance right of, like, it's hugely helpful to us internally. But I think for a lot of people who look at them externally, there's a lot of question marks there. It's like, why have they worded this question in such a way? Why are they bundling together?
Yeah.
Internally, it's
and I picked up on some of those things this year, too, with this year's survey, the wording of it to a bit tilt because players towards a certain way.
Well, and we noticed the same wording with a completely different view on the same wording, which was really weird. Remember, Shane, with the 120 construction question?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, from my perspective, I'm looking at it almost as a marketer. It's kind of this is the finished product. If we're marketing it, and of course, we've done the survey so we can split it between new, lapsed, and active players. Does this as a package work? Because that's probably, when we get to the end of the line, how we package it. So I kind of skip to the end, and a lot of players are like, obviously, hey, I don't like this bit or that bit. But I think that it's easy to underestimate how much we look on social media to break it up. Like, a lot of people were talking about, hey, I don't like the 120 bit, but I like the rework bit. It's kind of like, yeah, right, we've got that now. We've understood that feedback. And from our perspective internally, we were absolutely sure, you know, we're confident that a rework would work, but we're not really sure if a 120 construction would work. So we're taking all of this information. Well, I think a lot of players were just looking at the survey and worrying that we were just, you know, over-indexing on it.
Okay, that's good to hear. That's good to hear. And, you know, moving through Anachronia, we had the huge update at the start of July, I think it was. And unfortunately, things happen updates get canceled, and that's how you get that gap
put it
between.
So diplomatically.
Well, see, that's what I've been doing on the show. Tanis, you could attest to that. That's the exact same way I summed it up when it was happening.
Feel free to say some truth. I'm all right with that.
No, I don't do that. I don't do that. But you went from Anachronia to the Slayer log and then the bank placeholders without really much content in there. And, you know, in past on the live streams, you talked that there could have been weapon diversity. There could have been a quest that was in the works, but it was delayed. And the content landscape between bank placeholders and Anachronia was dry. So the question that I want to know on this is, could you give a bit of a timeline surrounding Anachronia, its release, and what was supposed to happen, and what might an alternate August and September have looked like?
Yeah. Yeah, let's do it. There is part of me that's kind of like, I can't think of a game that reveals its production schedule, but let's do it. So it kind of starts with Complicate Rework for me.
All right.
So, obviously we've been working on Anachronia, and actually Anachronia hit very few road bumps. So actually Anachronia came out when it was meant to, and I think we had some outsourcing issues with a vendor that we were using for animations, and that was it. Like, it got delayed a week, and even then we hadn't announced the release date, so it didn't feel like a delay. So yeah, we got Anachronia, and that was good, but Complicate Rework was the first time that we started seeing issues. So we allocated a bit of time to chat to players about it. But as you probably know from how it came out, like, there was probably a 50-50 split on whether it was too complicated, whether or not this is what actually people wanted. So we were in this position where players were a bit kind of polarized on it. And then also from a kind of senior exec point of view, internally, there was a lot of concerns that we were overcomplicating our game as well. So I was getting noise from the players and a lot of noise from, like, internally, that something should probably be done about it. So we kind of made our decision to simplify it a wee bit. But through all of the talking, all of the changes to the design documents, and the redesign by the end, actually, we'd come out with a smaller project that had probably double the amount of time spent on it than if we just gone out and made it, if you get what I mean.
Yeah, because I can count two or three different iterations of it, and from the players I was talking to, it didn't get sold to them until they saw the flashy pictures of it on a live stream of what it could potentially look like.
Yeah. I mean, I'm to be honest, you know, I'm still a fan of that initial design. I would love to, there's still an opportunity for it to come in. But effectively, what got delivered was half the update for double the time, as it were. And also, it didn't really have anything to play through when the initial design had new things to play, new things to earn. So that was the first kind of, you know, thing where it started feeling like the release schedule was getting slighter and slighter. And then we decided the weapon diversity and bank, when we announced them, that they were so core to everybody's routine that we had to make sure that they were right. You know, that these were good. And so we knew that we wanted to do what we did with mining and smithing, and to a degree, Complicate Rework. We want to make sure it's transparent, do betas, go on live streams all the time, sit on Discord, that kind of thing. And then we hit the other problems. So Bank wasn't too bad in that it kind of expanded a little bit based on beta work. And doing a beta, I don't think people quite realize how much work it can take to create this offshoot server, monitor it, get all the feedback, test it to make sure it's got everything it needs, that kind of thing. But weapon diversity was the biggie. Like, we put it out first. I don't know if you remember, it had, I think it was 14 weapons.
Yeah.
So it started off with 14. The theory being that that actually we wanted to see whether or not it would work. It's this kind of thing, like, do we go all in with something so big? And obviously we also wanted to maintain a certain content cadence because we learned from Menophos. So we didn't want to just, you know, spend double the amount of time to produce something with 28. I guess in hindsight, we should have, like, realized what the player sentiment would be, which is stop batching things, Jagex, thank you very much. Which, you know what, to be honest, has been feedback we've been given several times before. But then you look at things like bank placeholders, and people wanted that independent of the full rework,
right?
Largely. So the whole batching thing is more complicated conversation than I think people really account for.
Well, look at Invention. I mean, we love both batches of that.
Yeah.
So I mean, that was a weird one, too.
Yeah, you can probably give examples, probably more examples where batching didn't work than did. But
yes, that's fair.
And I mean, if you large, talk to,
oh, sorry.
If you talk to most players, the bank rework to them was placeholders.
I had said that all along. Yeah.
But if you look at mining and smithing, which followed a very similar model, we polled whether or not to just take the high level stuff out of it, you know, the new stuff.
Yeah.
And that was obviously rejected. And we even, you know, had old schoolers pole jumping the pole and all this stuff. Again, perfectly valid. So I think that probably the biggest thing we should have paid attention to was that weapon diversity was going to change the combat meta. If it does that, it needs to do it for everything rather than for something, you know, for half of it. Because it causes problems if you do it piecemeal. But anyway, yeah, so we then brought out the 28. And it's weird because the feedback, I mean, players are probably going to point out that I'm wrong on this, but the feedback was so fixated on how incomplete it was. There wasn't as much feedback on how it wasn't doing the diversity aim that it set out to do. There wasn't so much of that feedback. And so then when we got to the second beta, that feedback suddenly kind of came up and bubbled up.
Right.
And we were like, well, crap, like, what do we do?
Yeah, because I know the first thing I heard from my PVM friends on that, I don't PVM, was that it just adds an extra switch to it, and it's really not diversifying anything for me.
You smack on. Yeah, Switchscape started coming up a lot.
So,
huge credit to the team. The team took me aside. Even Mod Timbo, who was the initial designer of it, and said, look, we don't think it's fit for purpose, which is a very brave thing for the team to do, to be honest. Like, you know, I could just, you know, shout and rave, which isn't very me, but... and, yeah, we made the decision that we're going to cancel it, we're going to stop it, which, of course, was huge. I think it was the right decision. I think it was a wrong decision to kick it off in the first place, but it was the right decision at the time. So there you go. You've just swallowed probably about 3 months of development work.
That got cancelled, and we didn't have anything to arrive
from. Not a single thing. Not a single thing came out of that. So at this point, when we cancelled it, if we rewind a bit, we had already postponed desperate measures.
Okay, so that was supposed to be the quest. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, that was meant to come out probably around August time, I think it was.
Okay.
So the resource was swallowed up by weapon diversity and a slightly expanded bank placeholders, really. And at this time, farming and herbal was kicking off. Really kicking off. Like, it was kind of mid-development. And, you know, we would... I think that the kind of real trigger moment for me where farming and herbalore suddenly became a lot bigger than we had planned was that kind of Land Out of Time and Acronia fallout.
Okay.
Like, not as many people were playing it as we'd hoped. I think it was more niche in what it was trying to do. It's quite high level, which is, you know, it's a good thing. It only really added to two or three skills. Which I think, again, is a good thing, but it just meant that not everybody was playing it all the time. Again, I think that can be a good thing, but from a kind of, there was a lot of worry internally, and that just made farming and herblore, we had to make sure that that was good, that was right. And of course, then all this sentiment started bubbling up that at that time, and it became clear that we couldn't do a lean farming and herblore. It had to be packed. It had to do everything right. The Slayer to 120 didn't. It needed to just be complete. It couldn't have any bugs because we were also getting a lot of kind of comments about the bugs at the time. And if you remember a number of the updates.
Sigils is the big one.
Yeah, absolutely. And so all of this was kind of like a lot of the focus is on farming and herbal and they're getting right. So rather than keeping that lean, we decided to make sure that was good and full. But yeah, as I mentioned on the live stream, I think the best analogy I've got to visualize this is like a bit play tectonics. You know, Land Out of Time came out and we were pushing everything. Everything else was being delayed or not released. And on the other end, the bigger updates were becoming bigger and going out later on in the year. And it just kept on pushing and creating this gap in the middle.
Tanis, do you have any idea of the different discussion we would have been having on the show had we had desperate measures and, say, a bank rework sooner or the Weapon Diversity Project, can you imagine the different discussion we would have had those months?
Oh, you would have been totally, you would have been just happy as a clam, right?
Yeah.
With some, with the quest. You know, something that I find interesting with this whole, thing is what do you do when, a project like Weapon Diversity, you know, first you push it back, because it needs more work. You can like tell that. And on the show, we've always said that, we don't mind delays. Like, we're actually in favor of delays because that means the content's going to be better, right?
Isn't that
right? But then you run into this kind of like catch 22 because now things start to back up, and so like, where's that balance? Like, what do you do in those kind of cases to make sure that this, you know, you don't run into the same situation?
I mean, it's a really good question. If I were to be honest, brutally honest, about 5-6 years ago, you know, the time period that people often refer to as golden age of RuneScape and all this lot, back in the day, we would have launched it. We would have, I can't remember many updates that we just cancelled. If it was kicked off in design, it would be launched and we'd just go, keep on releasing. I think, but also back in the day when we had a bit more content cadence, we'd have updates as in our back pocket. Like, there'll be quests ready, area reworks ready or whatever, just to slot in if there was a problem. Because so many individuals, and it would generally be individuals, were working on individual projects. So we'd have, like, I'm trying to think, probably about 15 updates on the go at once.
Wow.
While at the moment, we probably have five or six. So it kind of gives you a different atmosphere now.
And I imagine things have gotten more expensive, too, in terms of... because of the production quality, the graphics and whatnot, right?
Yeah, massively. I know that it's very much an excuse rather than a reason, but you know, it is more expensive to make anything graphically nowadays than it was back then. I think one of the biggest ones actually is, I don't think you realize how many interrelated systems there are. You know, almost a victim of our own increasing meta here, but like achievements, challenges, all of these things that people expect on launch for something just keep on adding on. And just our game world has become that bit more dense. That means that everything interrelates. If you do something, you've got to test something else. And I think there's a bit more of an emphasis on quality than there was before. I know that some people might balk at that a bit, but like, you have designers now where there weren't before. Various other things like that.
All right.
Just got a few more gates to make sure things are good.
So one thing that just follows up on this, and we'll get into the future of Anachronia in just a minute. You know, we talked about the gap in content, and at the time with Anachronia, there was the rebalance to the hunter XP rates. There was also the rebalance to the player-owned farm. And this all happened while the constant promotions were coming in with the lack of content. And do you think that would have went over if there had been content in place instead?
Yeah, it's so I always see us as kind of curators of the game. You know, it's almost political, I guess. We're almost, you know, politicians making changes.
Political capital.
Yeah, indeed. And I think one of the things that I really challenged the team with, and this kind of started with Martin Smithing and throughout the year, is that we have to make sure our game works as well as adding to it. So I think that's why we had so many. I think if you've got weapon diversity in there, complicated rework, you've got bank placeholders, mining and smithing, it's actually a lot of making sure our core game is better in there. So
building a foundation, almost, I guess you could say.
Yeah, to be a bit bolder, because we've been scared in the past, if we're going to be honest. Like, to do that kind of change to things like farming and hunter, we've been really wary, because where's the positive in that? What are we giving? You know, like, not giving much, we're taking things away. We feel it's right, because then there's a diversity of skilling methods. It means people aren't just optimally training on one certain thing, that kind of thing. We thought we'd be bold, but the context just changed. It really did change. Where we were riding, I don't know if you remember at the start of the year, we're almost riding a high sentiment-wise.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Mining and smithing, you're fixing the game. I really like this. Keep it up.
Yeah,
and that's where it all came from.
We had our finger on that. We had our finger on that, definitely. Do you think that in the future, if you announce a rebalance to that, there might be a different way of conveying it to the players? Like, for example, if you were to look at, say, the thieving XP rates, because I know those are fairly high.
Shane, come on.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Kidding.
All right. So how would I do this differently? I think one of the biggest, I know it sounds like bribery, but I think I'm a big fan now of giving while we take away. So player on farm changes make more sense when you know that ranch out of time is coming, right?
And tons of new farming methods.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think the how that was all packaged was probably poor. I think that a lot of that was because of Runefest. We had this hard date that we knew we were going to announce things, but yet we wanted to make those farming changes early because we'd already mentioned them. I think that I'm a big fan of that. A little bit of bribery, I guess. I don't know. I mean, do you have any thoughts?
I have a question about some rebalancing in the future, or if there will be further rebalancing as part of remasters in the future. This is something that I've been kind of an opponent. I mean, I'm just be honest. Was not my favorite thing that was done over the summer.
Farming and Hunter.
Especially Hunter. Farming I understood, but only once I knew about the ranch on out of time. And Shane wrote a really good article about the ecosystem of farming. I kind of came around a little bit on the farming, but the Hunter, I wasn't a big fan of.
Okay.
But will that be a part of remasters in the future?
I don't know how much I talked about it in the Designer Diary, but one thing I'd like us to pivot a little bit on, it does sound like a bit of a mixed message, by the way. I do understand we've made all these nerfs, and then I'm talking about progressive balancing, as we like to call it internally. What it is that at the moment, we are trying to make sure that all older content doesn't get outmoded. And that you don't see that in any other MMO. It just doesn't happen, because you soon reach a point whereby it is impossible to bring anything out that a player values. Because you're just trying to slot it into increasingly small niches. So I think what we're looking to do with progressive balancing is it's okay for things to be outmoding something and to be, being a bit more valuable, giving a bit more XP. Obviously, that sounds real mixed messages was there before. But I think that what I'd really like that to be is the things that are old and outmoded are the things that we bring up to be progressively balanced, as it were. Sorry, does that make sense? I'm rambling.
Yes, no, that's really insightful. That definitely, I think that helps people be able to kind of understand what you're doing. It's not just you're not just cutting XP rates as much as you're making the older stuff relevant.
So I think in a Hunter sense, for example, we might not have made the changes, or we might not have made the changes as drastically as we did. And we would have just come in with a super lucrative big game Hunter, and that's fine. It might have been that we'd gone to 120 at that time. I don't know. We can talk about it, but I'm being more realigned personally to the idea of going up more incrementally than 120s. So I'm happy to talk about that.
All right. We'll get to that in the 120.
But a progressive balancing system works well if you are okay with upping caps a wee bit.
Interesting.
I know a lot of people are screaming into their microphones right now. And I know how 120s went down with a lot of players.
That's very interesting that you mentioned upping caps on that. And I know we're getting off track from the notes here, but do we see a future at all on that sense, moving beyond 200 mil then?
We did have in the annual survey at one point before I removed it a question of would you be interested in going beyond 200 mil? And I think that we all internally felt like that would not be the right move. It would feel like it was oriented towards revenue, like making money off promos,
right,
which is first of all make it a really bad call. But also, I don't know. I think there's in me, there's something core about RuneScape, the idea that you've ticked something off. You've done it.
Yeah, it doesn't want to be the thing that you wake up every day and you got to keep pushing on necessarily, so to speak. Okay.
I think that's probably been my biggest learning of this year. It weirdly came from Slayer Logs more than anything else.
Oh, interesting.
Is that players, when they play RuneScape, get a huge amount of joy of knowing that they've done something, is ticked, and they never, sorry, bad phrasing, they never have to do it again, but you get what I mean.
Yeah.
And by opening up Slayer Logs again, people had to do something that they already had to do with Slayer 120 and the player in Dungeon, and before that, you know, I don't know, various other things we've done to shift up Slayer meta, basically. And it's just like, oh, you're making me do that again? But I thought I ticked it. And I've realized that that's more core than I think for a lot of players. And so that comes into the 200 mil. And that is really, really a driving factor between looking again at 120s for me. You know, I think I've done it. Why are you making me do it again?
All right. So, and yeah. Go ahead, Tanis.
Well, would there ever be, you know, and this is pure speculation down the road, another 20 years, but is there any chance that that could be done with a cosmetic type item, like a pet or something like that, where that you were awarded at 5-4 or whatever the hard XP cap is, and then it would represent every, I don't know, 200 mil that you did again. I'm not calling it the P word, but
the P word. Yeah, I know the
word. We are big advocates of prestige mode here on the podcast.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Do you remember? I think it was probably about 6 years ago. I think we polled prestige.
Yeah, that was me that got it on Rune Labs.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Sir, congratulations. Fair play. But we polled it in a very, very certain mode, as in, you know, a resetting skill prestige, which obviously didn't go down well, and also kind of made us a bit fearful internally of even opening the conversation for a while. Then we kind of, I think it was about the Summer Summit, and the first annual survey, we also polled prestige. But as vessels, like maybe I've got a follower that I can fill up, as it were, with my XP.
That would be fun.
Yeah, and that went down better, but still, if I remember the feedback that came at that point, I think there was still a sense of moving the goalposts. I don't know where I sit on that. I haven't talked about prestige for a long time. It sounds like you are big advocates.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah. And it's good to know, just to know the kind of behind that that's been talked about too, because a lot of times, we don't know. We don't know what conversations have happened or whatever, and we're sitting over here. But, but maybe a pet that, you know, like, have they thought of this? This is a great idea.
Yeah. Just to reveal something, like Mod Crissell, RIP, one of our best developers.
Yeah.
Just before he left, actually, put together a prototype for a follower system, in that you would have an adventurer who followed you. Kind of, I don't know, there's almost like a...
Like a mini you, maybe?
Yeah, mini Meg, mini me.
Yes.
That you would do exactly what you're talking about. And you could, it would be a separate cape rack as well, because, of course, you've got another entity that you can dress up.
Oh, that's awesome.
But this is where I come in. My biggest issue with it was I hated the idea of half of RuneScape being, inverted commas, bots. That they are characters, and I suddenly start questioning whether I can talk to somebody or not. Oh. What that does to social play.
Oh, yeah, right. I never thought about that.
That's a very good point.
But then, I mean, there is still the, you know, it doesn't have to look like a human. Maybe there's something we could do that they could still wear the cape, perhaps. Because I think that's really valuable about help, you know. That's another addition that Mod Crissell put in that I really liked. The idea of, you know, I've got something else that I want to showcase. They can have my title, my other title that I really like, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, I do like it. I guess it's just, I don't know how rejected it would be by the core player base.
Yeah, and my main reason for it is that I got 99 farming as my first 99, but unfortunately we didn't have a cosmetic keepsake system before my next 99, so I never got to keep that untrimmed cape. But 120s, 200 mils, and larger and larger pieces of content. Last week on the live stream, you mentioned that the team started going back to expansion territory. And I think we already answered how that happened. In effect, you wanted the farming and herbalar updates to be more grand, and the couple little bits and bobs that happened in August and September with the quest and weapon diversity.
Yeah.
But what exactly does that mean for somebody who wasn't around for, say, Menaphos before?
Yeah, that's – so expansions for us were a complete change to our business model almost. I think that's probably a subtle distinction in that we wanted to create these kind of really clear moments that it's like, I should come back for this, or I should play as a new player, or if you've been waiting with a backlog of content, like, now's the time to come and play it. So we wanted to bundle together stuff for basically all of our personas. So if you're a story player, if you're a combat player, if you're an explorer type or a collector, there is a lot of stuff here for all of those groups. And whether or not that comes with a level cap increase we were playing around with at the time, but that's all bundled together. And we consciously knew that we wouldn't have as much update before, have as many updates before and after, but it's okay because there's so much stuff to do in that one update that it would keep you going over that period, you know, the quiet period, and that players would be okay with that. So you can see all the assumptions we made and all the incorrect assumptions we made there. But that's kind of what expansions were. With Land Out of Time, I feel the difference there, what we were trying to achieve that was different, was the Land Out of Time was a high point in a series of updates. So we'd keep the updates going, but you'd have things like Desperate Times leading into Song of Seren, leading into Building the Barge,
right,
leading into the quest that would then go into Desperate Measures, that would then come out into, sorry, I should mention earlier, would come out into a solo boss on the
island. Interesting. Okay.
So what you've got is less an expansion that eats up all the updates that surround it, and more a season, you know, I don't know how best to put it, almost this, like in TV terms, a series that just has a high point in the middle of it, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. Battle of the Bastards kind of running, you know, smack bang in the middle of it.
And when you put it in that context, you can see a clear difference between Menaphos and Anachronia.
Yes, it doesn't put all its eggs in one basket. You could have seen, I think you could begin to see what a successful Anachronia, sorry, a successful series, as it were.
Series around Anachronia, because Anachronia itself was successful in my books.
Yeah, I think the team were massively, massively down after Land Out of Time. Because
I thought it was well received.
Yeah, the sentiment was pretty decent, but if you look at all of the, like, how many people are playing it, how many people have come back for it, that kind of thing, it didn't do so well. And of course, the team felt like they'd failed in a certain way, and it was such an odd experience to be in the team at that time, because everybody's saying, I like this, you know, obviously it's got some hiccups, I really like this, but yet the company and things like that, it felt like it had failed. So it hurt them a lot.
That's unfortunate. I wish I would have known that, because, I mean, I had just so much high praise for it, and if I could have directed that at some of the creators, that would have made me feel a lot better.
Oh, that's really good. It's really, you know, obviously we do the best that we can to rally them, because they did do a good job, and we were kind of putting together, gathering all the feedback from Reddit threads and putting it into emails to the team. But I think it's because it was coming at the same time that a lot of the updates were getting truncated or cancelled. I think that there was a lot of kind of, it really hit the team hard.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
So here we are.
I don't know where I was going with that. I feel like I've taken us on a tangent.
Yeah, that's fine. And here we are, you know, we're at the end of November. We got 120 Farming and Herblore next week. So you mentioned that you want to get content cadence back. What does that mean? And this is, you know, a term that you would most often hear with a marching band back in the day in terms of cadence. So just for the listener base out there, what exactly does content cadence mean?
I really want to get one of the sticks now. I want to be a majorette. This is amazing. I'm going to do that.
I mean, if you came out on live stream next week and did that, that would certainly be something.
Well, a drill sergeant also works. You know, you can do that. Take that route.
Yeah, okay. I love that it'll be an in-joke that, you know, only we'll get. I'll do it. But it's one of those horrible terms that I just look at and think, should this be player facing? It's a bit, but I don't really know. You could call it almost like rhythm or momentum, I guess. Effectively what it is getting back to that glory period where we're releasing something frequently, which does a number of things for me. For one, it means that there's a diverse... one of the good things about content cadence is if you didn't like the thing that came out last week, there's something good that's coming out the week that follows, right?
Yeah.
So that's one big reason why content cadence works so well. Another one is that it's the whole kind of water cooler thing. It's like there's constantly a reason to check in. There's constantly a reason to pay attention. And to be honest, if you're a community, you've got friends and you're doing podcasts like this, there's stuff to chat about. And that's got real value too. And, you know, I remember the days of appearing on weekly behind-the-scenes videos or what have you. I loved doing that, and it felt really exciting and bustling.
We have noticed that you have been appearing more on live streams and month-ahead videos recently, too. Man.
Yeah, there's a number of reasons for that. But, yes, certainly wanted to talk was a big part of it. But where was I? It's also things like... the storytelling falls off if you don't tell a story regularly. I can't imagine paying attention to a TV series that told a story over the course of 6 months. You know, one episode comes out and then 6 months later I get the next one.
Star Wars. Sorry. I had something stuck in my throat.
So if you want to call ourselves episodic, you know, we've really got to do that properly. But the what's interesting is the obstacles that have always been in the way of that. I think there's a lot of, feeling, certainly internally, that's filler. Like we're just putting out things for the sake of it. And certainly if you're trying to satisfy niches with your content, like this time around, I want to do something dedicated to high-level bosses. This time I want to do something to, divination for high-level players. You're only hitting small groups at a time. And I think there was a lot of suspicion in-house that it wasn't big enough, broad enough, had enough reach, whatever you want to call it. But now I think that we've got so much ammunition thanks to this year that episodic content could be successful and we can really go after cadence.
All right.
So we're going to do that.
So does that mean we're going back to weekly updates, or are we going to be looking at something along the lines of one headlining per month and maybe one to two smaller ones with the rest?
That is a massively good question. first of all, while it was good to announce it, I don't think we're going to see it until about maybe kind of late January, probably February next year.
All right.
So, it's going to be post-archaeology. So you've still got these two kind of expansion-sized updates, and then you'll start feeling it. So we've started mapping out and strategizing and looking at what a roadmap might look like next year. And it's looking like probably two updates from our team. Around two updates every month, something like that. That includes, some months will be Elder God Wars Dungeon, some months will be, Temple of Sentistan 2 or City of Sentistan, sorry, that are going to be bigger. So it's going to flex a bit. Like, it'll be, I can imagine it'll be two in a month, two in a month, two in
All
a
right.
month. Elder God Wars Dungeon, two in a month, City of Sentistan, that
I
kind
can live
of feeling.
With that.
The thing is, what I want people to remember is that we are one third of the dev teams here. You could technically say one quarter. Because obviously there's the tech team as well.
Right.
So what you're going to have is you're going to have live ops. They're looking at seasonal content more. They're looking at making more satisfying event work, that kind of thing. So they will still be adding to it. Core game experience is trying to satisfy. I think there's a category of player who's really interested in improving things for a new player or improving the feel of the game or just... removing a lot of noise from the game and stuff that doesn't need to be there. Categories of stuff like, do you remember September, we did an opening funnel rework, Birth of Pentavly rework.
Yes, yeah.
They've also been involved in back placeholders. We kind of seconded a lot of their work. So those are the kind of updates that they would do. So that's layering on as well.
All right.
And then, of course, you've got mobile, which... depending on who you talk to, is either the best update in the world or the worst thing to happen to the game. So who knows what player appeal of that is. But of course, you've got full commercial launch and so many things that go around with it.
All right, so it's fair to say 2020 will be fairly energetic then. And
It's just whether or not you count them as updates. And I think that's one of the saddest moments for me was when Back Placeholders came out, like personally, because we fought tooth and nail. I personally fought tooth and nail to try to get that out, and we had to do a lot of tech feasibility to try to make it happen. But because it rolls out after such a period of time, I think the vast majority of people were just like, and that was so sad to me because I know how much work went into it. And I was really hoping that it would resolve a lot of people's kind of, where is my update? You know, obviously it's not content, but I still felt very passionately that that was the right thing.
And I mean, the RuneScape community is definitely an interesting one when it comes to the sentiment around updates or any hot button issue for that matter. What are
I think that there's a lot.
Well, go ahead.
I was just wondering, how do you, what are some of the methods like that you use to gauge that sentiment? Like how you mentioned a few times now about updates, maybe people weren't engaging as much, but like, so what are those like metrics that make you say, oh, that was a good one?
Oh man, I wish we didn't have any. It would make it so much easier. The team will feel so much happier. But from a sentiment point of view, we have the kind of qualitative stuff. So we have a monthly survey we do, which is really good, actually, because that that puts it in the context of all the other updates we've released in a 12-month period. So then we can put kind of the number of people who played it and the sentiment in the survey, because they tend to score it on a graph. Those are the two axes, and that tells us a lot. But then we've also got our kind of CM team who produce sentiment reports from across all of our social platforms. But we do also have, I can't remember the name of it, but we have basically an algorithm that draws from all of our social platforms without indexing one over the other. Unfortunately, not game chat. That would be ideal. But it pulls all of those together and gives you a kind of either we're in a negative place. So, you know, an update might be -11.2 or +12.3, you know, that kind of thing, because they look at certain keywords that people talk about. So that's another thing. And then obviously there's the thumb up, thumb down, which I think people, considering how prominent it is, it's completely understandable how it happens, but I think people think we put so much stock in that, but that is more just a kind of a game sentiment at any given time, and that doesn't fluctuate that much, actually. That tends to fluctuate more if there's a server outage or if there's been a big nerf than anything else, weirdly. And then in terms of like metric, you know, we have our analytics teams, and they work with our product managers in the house to kind of put targets against updates, and those will generally be, you know, kind of number of people playing or how long it retains people. Do we want a certain persona to be playing it? Does it do anything to membership or what have you? So those are the ones that obviously we don't publish, but we do have.
Okay.
That's a lot of data on the back end, and you know, you mentioned that to players, they probably would be floored at that, but when you think about it, it makes sense. Yeah.
We actually have a really big, like if you look at the industry, in industry terms, we have a huge data science team. We've got, I think, probably about 20 people involved in that kind of data. Obviously, I mean, the place to where I come from is, I come from a place of creativity.
Right.
And it's knowing when to use that, when not to use that, not to be led too much by it, how to try to retain a kind of creative space for the devs and that kind of thing. Because I'm sure you can imagine if you're working to, I need to create an update and it's going to increase membership by a percentage, like that could just strangle you a bit.
Yeah. So on that note, what are the steps that your team and in general the RuneScape team is taking to prevent a drought of content in the future from happening again? I noticed you mentioned that it'll come online starting in late January, early February, but what are those steps?
Well, so many.
Just take a brief summary from 30,000 feet.
Okay,
then.
All right. Yeah, I'll try to be brief. I never am. So first of all, we've got three seats. These seats are just a single developer, and each of those seats have a single focus. One is Epic Jam, one is Quest, one is Remasters. They're looking to produce something basically every other month, each of those seats. So they're just kind of like leapfrogging each other and constantly producing things. And we're going to get out of their way process-wise, And we're going to green light like five of them in a row. So basically, they just can get down to what they're good at and get good at making those things, maybe create tools for them. Another one is creating contingency updates, which means working with an outsourced team to do a lot of graphics-heavy updates and to spend money on populating things for the backlog so that if we get to a point where we have to cancel something, that we can slot something else in. So that's things like the pets, like clue scroll rewards, that kind of thing. But so we're working on those. And basically looking at our processes just to make things faster.
All right. Do the seats have an end date? Are they going to continue to work throughout all of 2020, or is this maybe something we only see going for half of 2020?
So the seats, probably a couple of them are starting mid-December. There's a point in about July of next year where we're going to take stock. So we'll do updates up until July. Then we'll look at how this is all working, whether the team likes it, whether the players like it, whether it works for the business, all of those things. Because that's the point where we'll probably finish Elder God Wars Dungeon as well, and where we'll probably also have finished City of Sentistan as well, a couple of our big updates. And so it's a really good moment to just decide, like, do we want to keep doing this?
Right, and that's where the roadmap presented at RuneFest did end.
It conveniently about the same spot, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we have got ideas for beyond that. You could probably anticipate there are things like, hey, there's a 20th anniversary coming up. So we have got some kind of bigger plans for stuff like that.
All right. And in particular, game jams. I know everybody loves seeing these. Are we going to see more of those in 2020? And what's their envisioned role?
Yeah. We've currently planning for a couple next year. What I'd really love is you could probably see how the engine will work in that an epic jam will happen. And then the epic jam seat is just waiting there hungrily, looking at all the updates that could be there. We'll kind of prioritize them according to player sentiment and, you know, how long they're going to take and that kind of thing. And then that epic jam seat is just going to chew through them until we get another epic jam that will top them up again.
All right.
And so hopefully that, like, we'll always have the cream of the epic jam. I think there are a few things I'd like to change from it. I'd like there to be more player input.
Yeah.
To what the team works on. I think we could have better criteria.
I know for the last one, I found it really hard for me, speaking from the podcast point of view, to curate just who was involved and what they were working on that. Yeah. Sentiment-wise, from us, we really like the skilling offhands.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Can't wait.
Oh, that is good. That is good, because you're not PVMers, are you? Because I know PVMers work well as well. All right. Let's get to here.
Elemental Workshop Part 5, of course, too.
Shane, of course. Killing me, man. Killing me.
I think one of the things we learned from the previous game jam was just how intensive it was to be on Discord all the time. I think that's what you've highlighted. It was hard to see what was happening. It was hard to see who was working on what. I don't know. We need to find a nice medium point of how we can get people involved.
Yeah, I don't have any ideas on that in particular right now.
Well, I liked what was done with, was it on the first game jam where a lot of that was live streamed and you could see everyone working and there was a chat you could interact with. That was good. I like that format.
Okay. Oh, that's good to hear. Yeah, it was almost quite a spur of the moment epic jam. It was almost a bit of a reaction to TAP in that we wanted to get that spirit back for our team. But then it went so well that we started folding it into our strategies and how we're going to deal with next year. So it was a bit more ad hoc than previous jams.
Makes sense.
Neat. So January comes and we have archaeology. This is going to be the first new skill since invention. We're going to have 28 in-game, which is hard to believe. I remember when runecrafting was added, and back then it wasn't uncommon to get a new skill at least once a year. So this leads to an interesting question, and one that is a bit of a head-scratcher for me, and I'd be interested to hear your opinion on. What is going to be RuneScape 3's criteria for adding new skills in the future? And is there going to be a guideline that says a new skill must be added every X years?
Oh, man. it's a difficult one because skills are huge. Skills, I think my mining and smithing might actually have been bigger, I'll admit. But like a skill is probably half of our team to produce.
Okay.
So you can imagine how we are at the moment. So we've got half the team on farming, or half the team on archaeology, which is exact. We've got these two colossal gobstoppers, which is stopping us producing anything else, and that's not how it should be.
And for what it's worth, when mining and smithing came out, we called those two new skills here because that's what they were. That was our branding on the podcast for.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for thinking that. But yeah, it's hard to convey that. Players already have mining and smithing. They've already achieved 99s, or a lot of them have. So I can completely understand why it wouldn't have the same splash as it would. But yeah, new skills. I'm a huge fan of new skills. I mean, they can add to the complexity of the game a bit. You know, can add to comp as well. So, you know, people who are like, oh, I'm never going to return now. There's been three skills in 3 years, that kind of thing. But I love them. I prefer them to 120s, I think, in expanding the game, if they're done well. But again, obviously, they've got to be, you know, super lavish, or they can be quite expensive. But there is part of me that I'd love your thoughts. Like, could a woodcutting exist nowadays? Could we release a woodcutting?
I think simple gathering skills are what RuneScape was made on. People didn't like divination, but it was one of my favorites when it came out, just because it was simple, it was gathering, and you could lean back and watch something while you did it.
Yeah. I honestly wonder. I do wonder if tastes have changed. Almost makes me want to go out and ask this kind of properly. I think you should.
It's an interesting thing to know.
Accepted. Yeah.
Well, I mean, my view is just that as someone that plays, you know, I play other games as well, and something that sets RuneScape apart from just everyone else is its diversity of skills and how they work and the mechanics. And, you know, I know there's a lot of PVMers out there and they're hardcore and, you know, they're sweaty, but skilling has the same things. If you know what you're doing, and it's what makes it so different from every other MMO, in my opinion.
Yeah. Which why we're so precious about them in a way. But yeah, if you think, look at archaeology, if I'm being honest, it is, I wasn't joking when I was up on the stage, it is a gathering and a manufacturing skill at the same time. It is both. And also with quite a few land masses at the same time. Like, part of me does wonder if, like, rewind a year and a half when we were commissioning it, does it have to be that big? But I sit there and think about, like, reaction to Slayer 120. I think about how our previous, like, three or four skills have gone down, and, like, people looking at divination and not being fans of them.
Yeah.
But yet, being more of a fan of dungeoneering, seems weird to say that now. Or more of a fan of invention, again, weird to say that now. Because they're so full, and they were expensive to make. They have a lot of content.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, from my perspective, when you look at a skill, it should be new, but it should also feel familiar on that. For what it's worth, I haven't done the test play of archaeology at RuneFest. Neither has Tanis, but I've talked to people who did. And the general universal reaction to it at RuneFest was that it felt very good. From the people that I talked to.
I do like the loop of it. Like, for me, it probably keys into what you're saying. It feels like a traditional gathering skill at its core. But then you have these moments of real payoff. Like, you know, you have that joyful moment where you've made a project, you finished a project that has real use. Or you've reached a level boundary, which means that you can now pass into a huge dig site. And now you're entering this weird exploration state. That for the next like 3 hours, I'm just finding so much stuff, these mother loads of stuff. And that's really joyful. So you're kind of, you know, you're doing your grinding, you're doing your training, but then you have these real moments of joy, like punctuating throughout the skill. And obviously there's also the milestones as you get ancient invention, ancient something, that kind of thing. And I love that heartbeat of the skill. So hopefully you'll enjoy that. I'm not, you know, it's obviously a bit of guesswork, but
yeah,
I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait. I wanted to be an archaeologist when I was a little kid, so now I'm going to get my chance. So that's awesome. You know, one thing that I think of when I think of, you know, a lot of my friends that are really into the gathering skills, those aren't the kind of people that that probably interact as much with social media and all that. Like, just with my own. I mean, I know that's anecdotal, but I just... So that's going to make your job harder to know, like, are people loving it? Well, yeah, they're loving it. They're doing it. It's just, you may not hear as much about it because they're grinding.
Oh, you're smack on. Like, we have come to terms over the past couple of years. I wonder if it's a sea change over the past couple of years, but if everybody's quiet and nobody is talking, then generally it's gone down well.
Yes. Yes, yep. I would agree with that.
Yep. It's a really odd thing to say. Like, nobody's talking at the moment. Oh my God. Oh my God. So we start panicking, but generally it's a good thing.
Like a bunch of kids with their new toys on Christmas morning.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. We're being quiet.
All right.
So, I don't think you get that from anything else other than a skill in RuneScape, by
yeah,
the way.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the reasons I love a new skill so much.
Yeah. And, you know, personally for me, I'm split. I would say I prefer the new skills on the whole, but 120s, the Herblore and Farming one are very interesting to me, though it could be because they're my two favorite skills in game.
Yeah.
My only reservation with new skills comes as a fan site owner in the podcast of doing all the legwork to get the systems we have ready for it, but it takes up most of the day. So new skills are indeed okay. Good.
But what's your take on 105s?
And that's
what's your take in going up more incrementally?
And that's what I wanted to talk about next with
was
this.
Oh, okay.
Because, you know, we got these two 120s coming next week. I personally would feel fine with that, but I think the question that comes in with that is that how do we ensure that players don't need to wait 2 years for it to go to 120 if you trickle it in? Or say it doesn't hang at 110 or something to that effect. I think that would be my biggest concern with trickling them in.
And you'd be absolutely right. Because like, if we went to 105, for me, because of just how the XP curve works, you're probably looking at, what, 3 unlocks per level?
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. If we wanted to go to that degree. And you'd probably also be looking for new ways to train from that as well. So you're looking at quite a chunk of work. And then, so what path do you take then? Do you just take all of the skills to 105, you know, one at a time? Or do you say, okay, we've done 105, next year we're going to do 110 and 115? I feel like that latter path would probably lead to some kind of skill fatigue. So, I don't know. There's part of me that thinks, like, stop it with the Herblore already once you've had your fourth incremental level cap increase.
I think Tanis would probably be the better person to ask about that because he's in touch with the high-level skilling community. On that, because I orchestrated my biggest concern about him getting held up, but I don't know if the high-level skilling community would have other concerns, Tanis.
Well, it's what I've heard is mostly that it would be confusing, it's really confusing. Now, I mean, when you get into like the elite skilling crowd, everything is the XP number anyway. But like myself, like I'm. See, I like both. I like new skills and I like the 120s, but I probably lean the 120s just because I like to push those XP rates. I like to, you know, getting that extra something out of it is the same for me as someone that is going and doing Solak kind of thing, you know, like that's what made like Hunter so special was like if you knew what you were doing, you could just go in there and kill it. But
no, I don't know.
Does that help? yeah. Well, I mean, it just because like if you got to think about your setup, and then you get your you know your keybinds just right. You got everything just set up just right, and then you get in there and it's gets so click intensive. But when you see that, like, dude, I just pulled 800K this hour. You know, it's like. Crazy. So I like 120s for that reason. I think it gives us more mechanics and options and things to play with within the skills that allows me to push it further.
That's fascinating. That was certainly the reason we wanted to kick it off in the first place was because then you're playing to something that's already core. It's already part of people's routine, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're adding something to other options, milestones for, you know, another joyful moment on the path to getting 120, you know, you've got all these milestones to things like that. We felt like, was that more valuable because you're enhancing the core of RuneScape is rather than constantly tacking more stuff on? So, you know, that was the motivation in the first place. But then it grates up against what we were saying earlier about like some people just want to check something off and leave it. So it's tough.
I don't envy your position because, you know, at the end of the day, RuneScape has a lot of bubbles, and maybe we're all in our own little bubble in some way. And it has to make it hard for you guys to bring us all together.
It wouldn't be fun if it was easy.
Do you have a preference, Mont Osborne, if they come in one shot or if you trickle them in?
I mean, from a there's part of me, I must admit, that initially rejected the idea of 105. Just I think almost from a compulsive point of view, like 105 isn't RuneScape. It's just not the right number. It's really odd. So it was just a kind of weird bodily reaction. But from my perspective, I love the idea of bringing something out full and complete, because then you engage with the meta so much. What I'm trying to say is, like, if you're doing 99 to 105, you're probably bringing out a lot of things and a lot of options at once. And then it plays into, obviously, what you were saying, Tanis, which was, then I start min-maxing, then I start playing the efficiency game. And that's really exciting. And if 99 to 105 is more full, potentially, than 99 to 120 is, then that game becomes more fun, if you get what I mean?
Yes. Yeah.
But my problem is the future. I'm with you. I just cannot see it. I can't see a satisfying solution to how that looks 4 years from now, 5 years from now.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree on that. Any thoughts on what you're thinking of for potentially the next skills to 120? Construction? Summoning?
I think you've picked my top two. Yeah.
Okay.
I think I think you've nailed it. The construction one is such a complicated question because it's not just a terrible spaghetti word term. It's that it's environmentally there's a lot of stuff there. It's also got baked in a lot of player. I've made my house. This is my house. This is what it does. Please don't change it. It's got a lot of that in there. Like, what do you do with player own house? I feel like you've got an entire training method that for me doesn't work. The remaking, you know, the making and unmaking of hotspots, that's just not good.
Preach on,
the thing where I'm coming to is the scale of that task is just gargantuan. But then you've got something like summoning, which I don't think is as needed, but I feel like there's this massive opportunity space there because familiars could be so good. They could be so well used, yet they're, you know, they're the occasional ones that are worth doing, but then there's pouch making and the training method.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, there is no reason why. And actually we talked a little bit about it with ancient summoning and changing the way that summoning is trained. So whether or not that will come out in the wash, I need to check with the team. But yeah, like moving away from pouch making, I would love to do. That problem is easier to solve than construction. But I don't think it's as big a need.
All right, fair enough.
But that'd be my top tier. I'd love to do divination as well, actually.
Oh, interesting.
That'd be my personal
one. Yeah.
I feel like divination, there's not enough reasons to train it. And I think it's good. It could just be made a bit sexier as well. I feel like it's just blobs of goo. I don't really know thematically what it's doing. Training it is somewhere in between a grind and intensive. It's in a really bad spot.
Yes. So,
finding the sweet spot would really help there too.
All right. Mining and smithing was executed amazingly. We love what Mod Jack and team did with that.
Yes.
And, you know, from beginning all the way up. And on that note, you know, players loved it. It did excellent things for the game, and players say that they'd like to see more skills reworked this way. We've heard comments before that it didn't really pay off in terms of the cost that it had associated with it. So yeah. The question is, would you call the mining and smithing rework a remaster, or was that an entirely different beast?
I honestly can't think of better examples of a remaster or what we'd like to do with a remaster than the Clue Scroll Overhaul, Mining and Smithing.
Okay.
Honestly, they're probably nailing what I would call a remaster. They are reworking something that is pre-existing. They're improving it. They're rebalancing it, making it valuable. They're also adding new challenges to give a new reason to come back. Like, you know, obviously, Clue Scroll Overhaul had Master Clues, and, you know, Mining and Smithing had Masterwork, and yeah, so they're spot on. It's just they're both really big examples. Well,
right.
At least Mining and Smithing is.
Yeah.
So obviously a remaster team that is dedicating, trying to produce something every couple of months or so, it's going to be more small and lance-like, I guess.
All right.
So, you know, kind of a managing miscellanea, kingdom miscellanea improvement would probably be, hey, let's add more progression to this, more different workers, more rewards, more valuable. it's better to use, as in the UI's improved.
Add some quality of life changes, because I think at this point it's probably 10 or 11 years old.
Yeah, absolutely. And then step back, and then you're done. It's not going to be a kind of, and we're going to add a new quest, and we're going to make it into its own skill, that kind of thing.
So not a package like Menaphos was in that regard, or entire narrative around it. And you hit the nail on the head in terms of that's what we can expect from the remaster seat in 2020. And Montimbo is leading that one, correct?
Yes. Okay. Yes, absolutely. Him and a developer.
All right.
It's yeah.
All right.
The person who's in with him as current is I'm trying to remember his name, his mod name. I think it's Mod Burke.
Okay. All right.
But he was involved in mining and smithing.
All right. So,
well,
fair enough.
Mining and smithing, bar none, hands down, best update next to Prif since I've been here for like the last 12, 13 years,
huge.
Something like that.
That's massive, right? I mean you can talk about salvage and stone spirits all day, and I do appreciate that they're, right now not in the right place because we haven't made the fix yet, but I think I feel like it's just a small percentage.
It was a small. Yeah, I mean, it was just one little aspect of. We just ranted and raved for, gosh, I don't know how long, Shane. Oh, we absolutely love that update.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It was the update that kept giving.
Perfect. It was so well executed, too. There was
perfect
bugs.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah, quite like that. I mean, a lot of that was down to the beta work. So
yeah, exactly. Bringing the players in and carrying them along with you is something that I've seen very important from positive execution. Do you have any thoughts on what you'd like the first remaster to be? I know you mentioned a reworked Managing Miscellanea. Any others that come to the top of your mind that we could potentially see?
So we're in a weird place in that we haven't actually signed off on necessarily what the next lot are.
All right.
There are a few that I know the team and I would like. I would really like guilds, weirdly.
That'd actually be cool.
Yeah. One of the things... I mean, the guilds, I've got a vision of them whereby they're a fantastic kind of progression track. It's almost like how PVM Hub is doing it for bossing, right? Like, what do I do next in the skill? Point me to it. Give me a feeling like not only through my level, but I'm getting somewhere would be great. And I'd love that for guilds. I mean, there's some of them that are just, if you think of the deadest content in the game, it's, a lot of them are guilds. Like ranged guild, warriors guild.
That would be so cool. Like plop a high level training method in there and
yeah,
boom. Well, not high level. Everything I say is through the lens of a high level. Sorry, that's just warm out, I guess.
I'm really interested to get my hands on the farming guild come Monday.
Yes, yeah. I mean, that's going to have some things in there that'll hopefully point you in that kind of direction. But I mean, it, while that might seem a bit kind of high level, how is this improving the core of the game? I think that if you think about new players coming in as well, like I want to be. All right, I'm liking this mining malarkey. Let's follow that through. And they're all working towards a mining guild, towards the mining guild. And they're working their way through it. They're becoming master miners and all this lot. It could be so much better than it is now.
Yeah, would you model, could you envision that being like kind of like an invention guild? Because that one does seem pretty populated. There's a reason to go there. And I mean, that's the one guild that I know I spend time in.
Yeah,
really, it's the only one I can think of.
I don't think there's a good example in RuneScape at the moment of exactly what that would look like. I think it's I think everything's a little way off. But you see this in quite a lot of other games. I'm sure even things like Final Fantasy Tactics. I'm thinking of now, where you sign up to a guild and progress through, and you get almost kind of unlocking of classes as you go through. I think there's some good stuff there without betraying what's good about RuneScape.
Oh, for sure.
Excellent. So that's what we can see from remasters and potentially some of the content in 2020. Christmas is right around the corner, of course. We didn't have Halloween this year.
Yeah.
One burning question is there going to be a Christmas event aside from the advent calendar?
So the answer is yes. I think that I wouldn't want to necessarily over-egg just – how big it is. I want to set expectations a little bit. So there'll be new content. So there'll be something new to play through, probably in a kind of old school vein. Ooh. If you know old school season events,
ooh,
in the, you know, there's something light, quick to play through, that feels seasonal, that gives you some really cool cosmetics out the back of it. And
sign me up
to that.
Yeah, that's totally what I want out of a Christmas event.
But I think that, you know, if you think about our history with holiday events, some people will love Broken Home. Some people will love the Spider Realm. Some people will love Violet is Blue. And I think that those are probably beyond what you're getting. You know, if I remember,
right,
my favorite was the Spider Realm.
Sure.
And the Spider Realm had a whole new, couple of areas. It felt like, to be honest, if you made that a quest, I would be perfectly fine with it sitting on the quest list.
One of our favorite ones was the Death's House Halloween event.
Yes.
A few years ago.
Yeah. Best one ever.
Oh, I love that.
That was so good.
Yeah, that was great. I really loved that.
And it was social too, which was really nice.
Yes, yes.
So
all-time favorite.
Important, right, for the holiday events.
This pivots.
So it will be a bit... Oh, sorry,
go
be
ahead.
A mix of reactivations. So it'll be a mix of reactivations. You know, things like, hey, let's bring back Cracker and other stuff. But it will also have some new stuff and new... I think a lot of this has come back from the feedback on Halloween. So we kind of changed tack when we saw the reaction to Halloween.
All right. And what do holiday events look like going forward into 2020? Blueprint, Christmas 2019 for other events in 2020 or different?
Very, very different. I think Mod Warden talked about this. So, you know, we've only had our Mod Warden for the best part of 2 months, really. But he's come off the back of games that are really big on seasonal events, seasonal content.
Yep.
Like, you know, Fortnite,
Overwatch.
You know, they are big on their seasonal stuff, and he is big on his seasonal stuff as well. So he wants us to be big on it too, and that means potentially more than just one team. So episodic content, I kind of set out my stall quite early and said that I didn't want us to be making temporary content. And I think that what Warden would really like is there's a persistent element that episodic content does, and maybe something more temporary from live events, live ops.
I think that would be an interesting way to approach it. Then you kind of get the best of both worlds then.
Yeah. So you can imagine maybe they'd be unified in theme. We'd join ourselves up a little bit. But you know, you've got, let's take Violet is Blue. So we would do the Violet is Blue bit, but there would also be, I don't know, Yetis wandering the game world, you know, delivering presents to people. So you'd have, it would feel joined up, and it wouldn't feel like we just kind of fudge two things together, but it would feel like it's global, but also permanent.
That's, and will that's that kind help? Of the hope. Well, does that help the teams too, not having to do such a big project by themselves, having it?
Yeah,
the episodic do the one area, live ops doing the other.
Yeah, I think you're right. I Broken Home was stupidly lavish. I can't tell you how long that took to make. I mean, I love it to bits, but yeah, it was huge. Where am I going? I think the alternative path we could have taken is the World of Warcraft approach, which is actually you have a hub area that you add on to every year, and everything that was there previously gets... brought out again, so you can get
right.
all the old stuff.
That's what Star Trek Online does too.
Right, okay. Yeah, I think a lot of games do this because it makes, from a production point of view, it makes a lot of sense. But I can't remember which Christmas it was that put us off from this, that we thought that maybe it wouldn't work for RuneScape, was the one where we reactivated lots of Christmas events in one kind of hub area.
Right. Right.
And I remember when that came out, there was a lot of kind of talk of laziness, of that was that year's Christmas event. Can you keep it that year? I want to keep my reward from that year. I want it to be rare to me. Don't let anybody else have it. There's a lot of these things kind of rumbling about.
Part of that, though, I think it was you guys were coming off of the previous year was just one of my favorite of all time Christmas events, which had the reindeer feeding and the feast. And you know which one I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
So that one was so packed that anything
you did the
following year.
Is that the one
set
in the Lumbridge Crater?
Yes.
Okay,
and
that one was great.
No matter what it was, like, the following year was probably not going to be as
true.
Big.
Yeah, you can always see a gradient. My favorite was Wizard's Tower, actually.
Okay.
I really liked the Wizard's Tower one. I just quite like the idea of the wizards coming together and just seeing them all in the same place.
My favorite was 2006 with the Toy Workshop and the Skies.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah, that was the year I started. I remember that
okay.
one.
Okay,
you predated me, Shane. I wasn't here for it.
I could go back to 2004 when RuneScape 2 launched, but
oh my,
yeah.
Do you have one? Do you have one?
No, I don't. I don't. But I did manage to, back in the day, purchase a Santa hat for $400K, and I still have that.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet.
I saved every penny for that. All right, so
that's a good investment.
Yeah, so one more before we move into the patch notes and your blog post this week. So with 2020 just around the corner, you mentioned the external studio. You've alluded that they're going to be doing graphically heavy content, pets maybe, something to that effect. Is there anything else we're going to see from the external studio, or what can we expect from that as players?
Well, you could probably look at the annual survey with a view to what is probably graphic, you know, heavily on the graphics, but doesn't need so much RuneScript, like coding. And if you have that lens on it, and also look at what came out in the kind of the top half of the survey, you'd have a pretty decent idea. But I think part of me, if we're into the old trap of do I announce too much? So I'm going to keep
only what you're comfortable with.
I know. I'm going to keep them a little bit. I have a horrible reputation with the staff in here.
Like, especially what you're comfortable with, actually.
I think the part of the problem is you've already seen we cancel more projects now than we used to, and for good reason. Like, if they get a certain way and it's just not working, we want to be able to cancel them. But I don't think a lot of players understand that. So we could be extra transparent. The problem is, if you're extra transparent, then you're showcasing a lot of things that don't make it. And then you get into that whole thing. I think we were in it like last year, where it's kind of like, why are you cancelling so much, Jagex? What are you doing? Right.
So
where am I going with this?
I don't know. So let's just say then perhaps graphically heavy content, things that might be more cosmetic in nature that might have appeared on the survey then, is something you could lean on the external studio for.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, absolutely. And what I want to make it clear on is they're not solely going to be graphical. We'll then pull them back into the team and then add some stuff.
Okay.
Like, you probably saw a genre of content. There's area remasters, for example.
Right.
I think people love the area remasters, not necessarily just because they're graphical improvements, because there was a reason to explore that area again. Like, if you took a Varrock or a Karamja, reworked it, the remaster was so joyful because we'd add new quest content there, or we'd add new NPCs to chat to, or new treasure chests to find, or new skill methods to partake in, that kind of thing. So, you know, there'll still be some dev work attached.
All right. Fair enough. Well, that, I think, concludes the getting back to regular updates section of the podcast. Tanis, you have any other questions you'd like to bring up on this, or should we move on to the
No,
pet
I'm
blog?
Just going
to
bask in the afterglow of that. Awesome. Right.
It was very, very revealing, and, yeah. I think the players are going to take a lot from this that they didn't have before, so it's going to be real fun to see the reaction.
What's your personal take on a lot of the things that we're pitching to change for 2020? Does it feel right? Does it feel wrong?
It feels like we're finally getting back on the upswing, and I personally can't think of a future of RuneScape that I've been more excited for.
That's good. I mean, we just got to act on it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's the obvious thing.
Oh, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago, wasn't it, Shane? When I'm really seeing the pieces are now in place to really modernize the game. And I don't mean, I'm not just talking like graphically or whatever, but just the way things work. I think we're looking at a much more, yes. And I think we're looking at a much more contemporary, game, like along the same lines of some of the other games out there, while retaining its own uniqueness, which I think is the exact way, that it should be going. I'm very hopeful and excited for the new year. I cannot wait for archaeology, and I can't wait to race to get back to Maxio. I know you're not supposed to. Well, I want to. That's how I enjoy it. Okay.
Well, what I really like is that we haven't actually really talked about the CXP team, the core experience team. It's almost like there's been one third of what we're doing that we haven't really shouted about.
They're on mobile, and you know, all those engine changes, at least the potential ones we saw at RuneFest, which is really interesting to see go forward as well, and that all factors in to this modernization. I have this saying, and I bring it forward on every podcast where that node is hit, and you know, past examples of this in the past were deep sea fishing, the needle skips, the player owned farm, Elite Dungeons and Anachronia. I say this is RuneScape 3, imagining there could be a huge ad campaign out there for RuneScape 3 with the slogan, "This is RuneScape 3," and showcase all of those updates, deep sea fishing, the farm, the needle skips, Elite Dungeons and Anachronia. And that's my definition of RuneScape 3, and building on that going into 2020 is what makes me really excited.
Oh, man. And I now want you as voiceover man. Thank you. Let's get that advert made.
I mean, I think it would be a great ad campaign to do.
Yeah. I think back to that time when we released all of those, and there was a degree of apathy to a lot of what we were producing. So it's lovely to hear that. Because obviously we don't hear from everybody.
That's too bad, because see, here is another little accessibility. It wasn't little, it was huge, because when we had the movable interface opened up all in the world, I could play again. Oh, that's awesome. Cool. Yeah. Yeah. It was cool. I could like actually put my backpack and click on food so I didn't die when I was fighting.
That's great. Well, I mean, you will see a lot of accessibility and diversity changes actually in our game in the coming weeks. So as I've said, I'd love to chat to you offline and find out more we can do.
Sure. Don't think we'll set that up.
Yeah.
All right, so Activity Pets design changes and the competition surrounding them. And I'm going to be completely honest with you. When this first came out, there were very few pets on this poll that appealed to me. I think the players got it right in the ones that they wanted with that.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming this is the external studio project, and I think it alludes to that at the end of the post. And, you know, would you say that the opinions that you got on this was spread far and wide, or was it largely just isolated to Reddit? Let's just say where the negativity came from.
It was a fair few places, but I mean, Reddit was dominant. I'm bad because I obviously, you know, I don't have a Twitter account. I over-index on Reddit. Because it's hard to actually post at home on our forums, which I think is a large proportion why I'm not in the forums as much. But yeah, so I got a lot of it from Reddit. It felt pretty unanimous, and it felt like the reasons for disliking it were all the same as well. So it was clear, like something had to be done. What's nice is that I'm the only person on the project at the moment.
Oh, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, as in, me and CM. Our community management team. That means we're a little bit more agile. You know, it's not as if we have to just rip up a load of concepts or things like that, or we'd already made some work. Because it's just me, then it's easier to make this kind of decision. But yeah, something clearly had to be done, which was kind of whittle it down to the three clearer winners and then address pets on a more broader scale.
All right. And I think adding the rune score pet was also a good idea, because I personally know of players who constantly aim to max out their rune score, and that's why they play. They're effectively achievement hunters, let's just say on that. So I think that was a good choice with that. And, you know, we talked about this on last week's show, that when it came down to the pets, we would much rather see the quality of life improvements rather than having specific animations for each pet. And I think that's the direction you wanted to head, correct?
Yeah, I like accidentally, and it probably should have been this direction in the first place. It turned into a remaster. You know, you could call this now a pet remaster. It's got new challenges, but it's also looking at quality of life for the old stuff.
All
so, yeah, well worth doing.
And with this, you know, I think the biggest thing that we haven't talked about yet is going to be the player design element. And it was talked about by JD on the live stream, is that, you know, if you have an idea for a pet out there, you don't need to be the next Picasso or something to that effect to create one of these pet concepts. You can literally just do a quick sketch or send an idea of what the pet might look like for that thing, and your artist will take it away and run with that. And I think that's a really neat thing to be doing on this front. So.
You're absolutely right. I mean, I'm going to be brutal. We're probably going to have to reconcept anything anyway, no matter how good it is, unless you're so good that you know the various kind of perspectives you have to have on a pet to make something modern. But so yeah, I mean, potato prints, crayon, face prints, I want to see it. we have, I mean, there's absolutely no reason, I don't think, I'll have to check the competition rules. I know we did it last time. Why it can be a description of the pet. So yeah, all of these are good.
And they're going to be clue scroll, area, money making, and rune score. And, you know, I think the funniest thing I can think of for the money-making one would perhaps just be a stack of GP that wanders and follows year-round, kind of with the new shiny effects that we saw in the money tree.
Yeah, it's been the most memed out of all of them, hasn't it, for obvious reasons.
Yeah. And would you say, I think the next question I want to ask on this is that with the pet remaster, as we're calling it now, that cosmetics and the way players present themselves in game, could that become a greater focus in 2020 and beyond?
What specifically pets or
pets, cosmetics, just in general, just advancing the way our characters looks and the cosmetic options available.
Yeah, absolutely. So I mean, this falls into, obviously there's a degree of live ops here as well, in the obviously they're exploring different ways of doing cosmetics. You have to, you know, look at catwalk for a good example. Of different ways that you can be, you know, bring cosmetic channels into the game. So yeah, I think so. I don't think that we as episodic content will be in that realm much. We'll look at it from a reward perspective.
Right, fair enough.
So I'm just trying to get my answer right here. I don't think we'll be looking at cosmetic channels as much as live ops will, because obviously they're looking for new ways to bring value to things that are cosmetic, other than, you know, XP, bonus XP, that kind of thing. We will be looking at just what we can do off the back of quest content, off the back of minigame content, off the back of bosses. Is there stuff that we can do there?
And now you have the underpinnings with it, with the pet remaster, to do that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I would love to have more than just pets. I think one of the things I sense from the community is similar to about 4 or 5 years ago with titles. It's just that fatigue. It's just that sense of, like, come on, I want other ways to achieve. I can only have one at any one time. I've got the one I want to showcase. Can we move on, please? So it's more about, like, are there other ways that we can get a player to achieve? I would love, for example, I've seen it on Xbox, but the idea of a gamer card.
Oh, that's interesting.
We kind of got that at the moment with Inspect, but it's not quite as customizable and collectible and showcasing the favorite things that I've got that it could be. So, you know, maybe it's that area. At one point we announced footprints, but then you're getting into the kind of just how ridiculously over the top am I going to look?
Right.
I've got particles on top of that. And also technically it was a bit of an issue. So, got to find the right thing.
All right. Well, if anybody listening wants to send in a pet design document or suggestion or concept, you can find the link to these at on runescape.com under the activity pets design changes and competition page. We're going to move into the patch notes right now, and what we do here is we just read these out, and if either of you guys have a comment on them, please just do jump in. But this is normally a rather quick fire segment. So starting off with combat changes this week, resolved issues affecting the buff bar. Last Tuesday, this was a big one for many players out there, and I know it was resulting in some PVM deaths. So I'm glad this one has been fixed last week, and it's in the patch note this week, so that's good. Fixed an issue stopping action bars from being accessible. I can't say I ran into this one. Tanis, did you hear anything about this one?
No, I actually didn't.
All right. Mod Osborne, do you have any?
I don't, I'm afraid. Sorry. Right. I'm patch note kind of unsavvy.
All right. Fair enough. The weapon poison buff is now removed once dead. Boy, that would be something to come back and still be poisoned.
Yeah.
Poison features so often in patch notes. Regularly.
in general patch notes now, the player is now stopped from harvesting from a crystal tree based on how many inventory spaces are required. So I guess that was just a, kind of an overflow case there where you could harvest it if your inventory was full. It'd probably go down to the floor in that sense. You'll now receive a clearer message on how to summon Penny once the pet is unlocked. Going back to our pet discussions, I don't even know what pet Penny is.
I'm now looking it up. I'm terrible.
Penny. Penny.
Penny is a miniature Dark Lord pet that's obtained by combining a Dark Soul, Dark Mind, and Dark Body, which are rare drops from the Truthful, Blissful, and Manifest Shadows in the Amlod clan.
Oops. Yeah, this is content I designed. Brilliant. Well done, Dave. Let's ignore that.
Black Knight Captain Armor will now count as a Fortress Disguise if partially keepsaked and activated alongside equipped armor from the set. That's good.
That's really good, because now I can bring back my Targaryen outfit again.
Anagram and Riddle Clue Scrolls now provide a message when the player's inventory is full. Will not drop the puzzle box on the floor. All right. Added a sound effect to the deep sea fishing notes when redeeming XP. This one's good for you, Tannis.
Absolutely. Yep, I absolutely saw that.
The XY tracker for an achievement path in the activity tracker heading now displays the selected achievement in the path and not the completed in the achievements in the path. All right. To keep systems in sync, selecting a locked or completed achievement in the path window now also selects this achievement in the activity tracker, and content icons in the activity tracker now display a padlock over locked achievements and a tick over completed achievements in a similar fashion to the achievement path window. And this iterates on some of the concerns we had when the new achievement and path system launched, because there was some of these little UI things that we picked up along the way, and it's nice to see these iterating on them.
Yeah, it's often quite hard to communicate the value of making things consistent, particularly in UI.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it really is. Really is important.
Placeholders for golden rocks are no longer removed when building the statue of Rhiannon.
Makes sense.
Fixed an issue allowing hidey holes to be used during Evil Dave's Big Day Out quest. Now, I wonder, does this mean that they shouldn't have been used then?
Just how would you exploit that?
I don't know. That's a weird one.
I need to ask.
Yeah. I just read it as like if you stopped in the middle of the quest, you wouldn't be able to use.
Oh, that might be it.
Oh, maybe it's the instant bit. There's instant bits in the quest, isn't there?
That could definitely be it then. All right. Mobile-wise, fixed an issue with the on-screen dialogue window where a user was unable to tap on the right side to continue if the dialogue window featured an item on mobile. To prevent unresponsive behavior on mobile, the emotes tab has been removed from the social window, but players can still access all their emotes and transmogs from the right-hand side of the ribbon or by dragging a favorite to the action bar slot. And finally, a toggle minimap option has been added onto the mini menu of the toggle button for mobile. And for what it's worth, we are saying these mobile changes without being able to look at these, because we are both iOS users here, so we haven't been able to get our hands on it.
Yeah. I can only apologize.
Fixed an issue that was preventing users from selecting and auto-casting spells if selected from the spells tab of the powers interface on mobile.
Can you repeat that, Shane?
Yeah,
I'm just kidding.
I don't know what the wording there was on that.
Somebody paid for the selecting? It's pretty odd.
Yeah, there's lots of selecting going on with that one, so we'll just leave that as is.
Yeah, I was linked a lot on Reddit to a thread that was talking about how poorly edited the patch notes were. We are definitely looking at that. I am sorry.
All right, it's fine. Graphical changes, removed map icons for the old lodestone on Tuska, added some chat dialogue to clarify why players can't cross the bridge in the Temple of Ikov, and the flames of the flaming sword effect will now look better on wilderness swords. You gotta love that attention to detail that, you know, we have these four wilderness swords in game, but the flaming effects were out on just those ones and it warranted a patch notes. That's what I love about the patch notes, is that you can get the tiniest of tiniest things that have impact for not the entire player base, but it just makes someone's day. And finally, deposit box menus now all refer to themselves as the Bank of Gilamar.
Just in time. We're going to see a lot of those coming out tomorrow.
That's right. Double XP weekend. All righty, folks. There's the patch notes. As we are running near the end of the show, normally we do not have any listener questions this week. We're just going to go straight into tech news. But before we do that, I would just like to give thanks to our wonderful Patreon supporters who have made this episode entirely possible. First up, I'd like to thank Brock H., Cameron, Cass, Christian S., Darren L., Diana, Jason S., Kyle, Logan H., Rippeth, Sam W., The Naked Captain, Tom V., and Zez. Thank you all of you for your support. It truly does mean the world to us. And if you're wondering what all this is about, you can find out more about this on our Patreon page at patreon.com/rsbnb. There we have three tiers of support. You can start off for as little as $1 a month, and you'll get a special mention in our show notes each week, early access to the show notes, and you help fund the cost of hosting and production of RSBNB Update. You also get access to our entire back catalog of monthly bits, special little bonus shows on very deep dive discussion topics relating to RuneScape. And of course, you get to vote on topics for the monthly bit, which there is a new vote up there now for the December monthly bit on that. We'll be talking about that this weekend at our roundtable, which Patreon supporters are also able to access. For $3 a month, you can get a special VIP rank on Discord, a mention on the podcast at the start of the month, and access to high-quality stereo AAC versions of the show. And finally, if you want to give the ultimate gift, for $5 a month, you get a shout-out on the podcast every week and gain exclusive access to the outtakes that we use for the clip show, which is coming at the end of the year. Not too much time left on that now. But as I mentioned, we have our monthly bit poll that's up. Next week, instead of Inside RSBNB Update, I'll be doing a Patreon exclusive first look live stream. The first time I log in on Monday, we'll be doing this live stream of me having a look at the new 120 farming and 120 herb lore content. So that should be real fun to do, and that'll be made available after the fact. And, you know, we also have the round table. We'll be doing this on Double XP weekend this weekend in the RSBNB Discord. And finally, should we at some point ever reach the mythical $99 a month tier, it'll be movie night in the RSBNB Discord with Shane and Tanis, where we'll watch some of our favorite movies, and there's going to be some Star Trek included.
Rise of Skywalker.
Maud Osborne, what's your favorite movie? Do you like Star Trek?
Yeah, I do. I must admit, I'm more of a Star Wars.
I'm so sorry.
I mean, obviously not like new trilogy.
All right. Well, you can...
have I given the wrong answer?
No, no. Just for shame. You got one of each here. You can find more about that at patreon.com/rsbnb. Yeah, First Contact is great. All right. So tech news this week. Half-Life 3 confirmed? ? Half-Life Alyx is officially arriving in March of 2020, and it's going to be a VR exclusive game, a prequel to Half-Life 2, but taking place after the first Half-Life. I don't have VR headset.
I know.
I know. I got to play Vive one time, and it was like the most awesome experience ever.
Yeah. I don't think we're kind of in Diablo Immortal area here, in which, you know, something has been brought out that's so against what the players want. It is such a shame that it is VR. But it looks so gorgeous. It looks so good.
Yeah. And, I mean, someone's got to hack it at some point to make it available for everybody else, I think. That's probably going to happen. Right?
And it's going to come out on more platforms, right?
I think so. Because
come on, orange box it for us. Come on, Valve.
Yeah, they really ought to do that, because you know the perpetual myth with Valve is that they can't count to three.
I've heard that.
Because Half-Life 3 was always supposed to be teased and confirmed, but it never arrived.
Yeah.
And
Portal 1-2.
Now here we have something that is a prequel to Half-Life 2, which you can't call Half-Life 3, but is really doubling down on VR and is going to be one of the first new games that Valve has ever made. And my only concern with this is there going to be enough of a market for this to actually be successful, I wonder? With just VR.
I wonder what they do if there isn't. You know, like, do they do as you say, bring it just as a standard FPS?
I think they would have to, because you don't want to sink all that dev work for nothing, right?
Well, you say that, but obviously designing VR is very different from designing an FPS in that, like, how is mobility handled in the game? I'm really interested in that. Like, is there a whole level to explore, or is it a railroad, you know? Have they said?
No, they haven't. It's just been all very teasery so far.
Yeah.
Well, and it won't even become, like, it's just not even coming out on consoles, which is the most affordable VR, so, too, right?
Well, VR has been waiting for its killer app.
Maybe Valve is going to release a good-priced VR headset.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe. Like, their headsets are great. It's just, you've got $800 for...
Exactly.
You know what's going on right now? We need an official head crab VR set.
Yeah.
I mean, where's that fry meme?
And there's nothing more Half-Life than the head crab.
There is nothing more. Nothing.
System requirements, though, aren't that high. It's recommended to have an i5 7500 or a Ryzen 5 1600 with a GTX 1060 or RX 580 graphics card.
What? How's that possible? Like, you have to have more than that to run Red Dead. That's not VR.
They're also saying it's going to be 12 gigs of RAM as a requirement too. Yeah.
Now, someone that knows stuff more than me is going to have to explain that.
I don't know how they're doing VR on a 1060 in that regard. Then
I think if there's anybody who knows how to do that, it's going to be Valve.
Yeah,
they have Alchemist.
And,
wow, it's impressive.
And I haven't heard if it's still on the same engine too. But if it is on the same engine, that would explain a lot of these things. So, only time will tell, I guess. And people are going to be counting down until April to get the next chapter of the Half-Life storyline in the form of a prequel. All right, our next tech news story is something that's very important to me, and I can't underscore how important this is. Apple announced an expanded Everyone Can Code curriculum, and with this they're also increasing the number of coding sessions that are available at Apple stores in order to help people get involved in computer programming. Right now, they say that their platform for coding is used by over 5,000 schools worldwide, and it starts so simple by building on existing puzzles and games and then gradually moving people towards their Swift Playgrounds application. And the whole idea behind this is that Apple feels that if they can bring coding into the classroom, it will effectively let students who are just going into, say, high school or junior high school get that leg up for skills that are crucial if they want to go into something computer related inside a university, for examples. And it doesn't just end for the young children either. Advanced coders who are currently in high school or colleges can also utilize the Develop in Swift curriculum, which provides a blueprint effectively for creating iOS and Mac apps, and will put them on the path to qualifying them for future jobs in technology. So this is something that Apple has always been at the forefront of education, and seeing it from the computer science programming perspective is indeed really special. And this has been a pick of the week before here on the podcast for iPad was the Swift Playgrounds application, which I still do recommend if anybody has an iPad and wants to learn a bit of computer programming starting at the most basic levels. Swift Playgrounds is the way to go. So this is a really, really important announcement today from Apple.
Yeah, it's great because everybody benefits, right?
Yeah, and I mean, even if you're not making a killer app or a killer game. Knowing how the computer works and knowing how to do these things can greatly help, even if you just need to automate something, right?
Yeah,
you're so
right. That's crazy to think that, you know, when I was in high school or whatever, one, you had to hope you could have a teacher just, you know, show you something on their own time of, like, you know, after class or something, and then you were, like, literally punching in commands on MS-DOS, you know, the SQL and stuff, and teaching you stuff, and now you're talking about puzzles and games. Cool.
Yep, that's just the way it goes, and it's so, so important for the future. So everybody who is interested in this and wants to take part should probably look in and doing that, and the best way to get started is to pick up the Swift Playgrounds app on the iPad if you have that. I'm not sure what the Android equivalent is, and maybe some Android listeners out there could help on that front, but very important. Next piece of tech news goes out of this world, where astronomers have detected water vapor around Jupiter's moon, Europa.
I don't know, but that's a Jagex quality pun there, Shane. It's a good job there.
Huh? What did
I
do?
Need to get you right in Quest.
What did I do?
Out of this world.
Oh, I didn't even realize I did that. So Europa is one of Jupiter's moons, and back in 2016, they observed a few plumes with the Hubble and Keck telescopes that were emanating from the planet. And what they do with this is they look at the way light reflects off of the molecules, and then they can determine what the molecules are made of. And analysis over these plumes has shown that they were indeed water, which is so groundbreaking because anywhere you have water, there is a chance for life. And there is something on that moon that made these plumes come up to the surface, whether it be some kind of geothermal activity beneath the surface, we don't know. But this is, for all intents and purposes, the next frontier in the exploration of space and looking for life beyond this planet in terms of water. And, you know, this is something that I had to take a minute to think of and take stock of when this arrived, because, you know, you have a glass of water and you just take it so for granted here. But we're seeing this on a moon halfway across the solar system. Plumes of water that could potentially mean something in terms of life. And this is, you know, the next step forward for examining this kind of thing. We don't know whether there's some kind of geothermal activity underneath, or there might be some kind of undersurface ocean that's causing this, but this is going to be really amazing if we do indeed find there's some kind of ocean under the water causing this. So
that's exciting. I don't know why I think of it. I almost see it as it could also be an oasis on the way out of the solar system kind of thing, you know?
Like a last stop. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Wouldn't that be great?
That would be a fun way of thinking of it too. So, and, you know, I just bring it back because we're all so focused on what's happening in RuneScape, what's happening in the world, what's happening in tech news. But lo and behold, there's plumes of water coming off some moon of Jupiter that we didn't even think of until tech news.
And not as far-fetched as you'd think, because the scientists believe that at one time Jupiter was terrestrial and probably did have water. So I'm not too surprised that they finally found it on Europa. It's going to be so cold, we're going to have to bundle up.
Unless there's a huge geothermal activity and it's, you know, below freezing underneath. Well, I'll have to wait.
Well, hey, I mean, we got warming things up down. We can totally work that out. How to do that.
All righty, folks. That's it for tech news. We're going to move on to your achievements in just a sec, but it is worth noting that we are running the Herblore, our Farming and Herblore Skill of the Month competitions, as I mentioned we would for this. So they start the day after the release. If you want to sign up for these, go to rsbnb.com/SKOTM, or you can find the link to sign up for these in our show notes at update.rsbnb.com. So look forward to seeing what people get up to with all these new XP rates and training methods that we got there. So Let's do some achievements. Tanis, start us off.
Okay. I'm going to do my best here, guys. So let's start off with Smartin. Smartin?
Yeah, I think
that's I guess was with a J. with 99 Farming, Shane. Ooh, on November 20th.
Nicely done.
Then we have X Gen Wirenex with 99 strength, November 20th. My apologies. I don't know what your name is. And then we have Cypodebo with 99. God, another farming. 99 farming.
Yeah, people
November
are stacking
19th.
Them up.
Yeah, they're getting. They're like, we got to go. And then we have Eric's with 99 mining on November 19th.
Nicely done.
Good work, sir. I get the easy ones. I feel really bad. He was so much harder. So I've got Kaspar. Double F, yeah, double R. I've got 99 fledging. Good work, November 19th. Then we've got Thelian. He's got 120 fishing on November 18th. Just in time for when we go to 120 fishing next year. Jokes. Coded Ninja, got 99 runecrafting. I can't even imagine getting a 99 runecrafting. On November 18th. And Crying Wolf, 99 runecrafting on November 18th.
Nicely done. Next up, Scarecrow with 99 magic on the 18th. X-Gwen YVARX with 99 invention on November 17th. Delta with 99 woodcutting on the 17th. And finally, Farrar got 99 magic and 99 cooking on November 16th and 15th. Congratulations to everybody. Nicely done. And we're going to have a lot of work to do next weekend, Tanis, and the week after with Double XP.
Oh, man. And the list are so big.
Double XP weekend comes around. Sometimes we have 3 pages of these things to read out, and we need to find ways to print it down.
What do you
really
do,
auctioneers? Well, we've omnibused them before, and we've read them all out before. So, we've done both.
We just have to see the way it falls. But anyways, pick of the week time. Maude Osborne, you said you have a cracking pick of the week. So what do you got for us?
Oh, man. Right. Yeah. So I'm a big movie and music fan and comics fan. So can I have two?
Sure.
I'm going to read a comic right now. Powers of X and House of X is just a hell of a comic. Mr. Hickman knows how to write a comic. And it's the most highbrow X-Men comic series you could ever come across. And I've been trying to watch as many movies as I can this year. I've got up to about 150 movies that come out this year. It's pretty good. I'm a list maker, and I've kind of listed them all. So, you know, you've got your Avengers in there and stuff like that. But I think the surprise for me this year has been Midsommar. I adored Midsommar. I love my horror, but this just kind of freaked me out completely. I do love a bit of it. So if you're into your Wicker Man or... You know, that kind of genre. Like, it's really odd to have a horror movie that's almost completely in the sun. And this did it very, very well. And
that's interesting when you think about it, a horror movie in the sun. And 2.5 hours long, too.
Yeah, not a moment in darkness in the whole thing.
Interesting.
So those are my top tips. They're not exactly left field, but they're great.
Well, they're ones we haven't heard before, so that is perfectly A-okay, and they're very unique, too. I don't think we've ever had a horror movie picked, and I don't think we've ever had a comic picked as well. So very good picks. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, so what have we been up to in RS or otherwise? Tanis, we'll start with you.
Well, so, of course, last minute getting stuff together, right, because I didn't know what I'd be doing. And for a minute, I've been stocking herbalore supplies for a year. So ever since the last DXP weekend, right? No, not the last one. The last Game Blast. I've been stocking up for the next one. And then with 120 Herblore, I'm like, I might need to go ahead and at least make the extremes and stuff like that this time around. So I went to start doing that, and then I saw the prices on the super potions, and I said,
Yeah, how about we go get the camouflage outfit and go pickpocket and Priff? So I've been doing a lot of pickpocketing and just sorting some stuff out. I went ahead and got enough selfish, I think, to go ahead and finish off my my cooking. I only got like 40-some mil, and then I'll hit 200 with that. And then might do a quick 10 mil in summoning for 120 there, and then try to hit the thieving 120 with safe cracking before Shane gets his way any further.
He's been a voice in my ear.
Well, that's about it. So it's been kind of busy weekend.
All right. Mon Osborne, anything you want to share? I don't know if
I've had an odd experience of trying to get my quest all done again. And basically, the quests I haven't done have been from the past couple of years. So the quests I haven't played have been the quests that I've written.
Oh.
So I had a weird experience.
That must be a very weird feeling.
Yeah, because, you know, obviously a majority of it was written on paper. So, Needle Skips, you were at Curse of the Black Stone. That went through
favorite.
All of those.
So favorite.
Yeah, I was going to say, those like two of our favorites.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Needle Skips was such a passion project.
Yeah,
good.
I'll just take this point to say that if any of the listeners are out there like Mod Osborne, you love your quests, you love all the quests, check out Clan Quest. That's also the clan that I'm currently leader of. So Clan Quest, guest us in chat if you like quests out there. We absolutely love having anybody in who loves quests, and it's the place to be if you love quests in game. So,
top-notch plug. Let's get some more quests for you.
All right. As for me, you know, I've been enjoying the mini gold rush that was involved with Fellstock. You guys ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
I made 20 million GP in the last week off Fellstock.
Nice. Nice. Yeah, ain't bad.
Yeah.
Well played.
Yeah. Grenwell spikes were also good earlier in the week, too, with the baitless perk from the elf task set on Anachronia. Just go there, you collect them. You know, that's definitely a few mil an hour. It's never been easier with this double of new skills coming next week to 120. To make money as a skiller, I find, and I am absolutely enjoying it. So that's what I've been doing, so much so that it's actually taken away from any double XP prep that I'm going to do. What I'm probably going to do for double XP weekend is activate the alt character again and do some farming and herb lore on there and dive straight into that with that character when that arrives next week, because I'm, you know, 162 million farming XP, and I don't want to go too heavy at it because I don't want to get 200 mil and stop getting XP and farming. So I'm rationing the amount of XP that I get in game for farming right now. So it's likely going to be done on the alt character.
That's blasphemy.
I just don't want to get a 200 mil. I just don't. But it's just me and the way I play. But anyways, I believe that wraps up this episode of RSBNB Update. Mod Osborne, anything else you'd like to say or plug before we head off?
Oh, man, I haven't said how glowing I am of your podcast, which is part of the reason that I'm here, to be honest, is I'm late to the party, I must admit. I only started listening a couple of weeks ago, but have since listened to a fair few of the others. So
thank you so much.
I just want to say thank you so much for like having me here.
It's our pleasure to have you on the show. And, you know, I hope our listeners enjoy the segment that we did. If anybody wants full show notes for any of this, you can find it at update.rsbnb.com. You can also subscribe to the podcast on any podcast listener out there. We're on practically all of them. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, and of course, YouTube. update.rsbnb.com/subscribe and just click on the one that you want. And, you know, we also have the Friends Chat Bits Bites if you want a guest in there too. So with that being said, we'll be back next weekend for another episode of RSBNB Update. So we will see you guys then, and have a good double XP weekend, everyone. Take care.
See ya.